Hello, Chris Bentley here, producer for Here and Now. Thanks for listening to our podcast, Here and Now Anytime. Make sure you don't miss any of our reporting or in-depth conversations by following us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, NPR One, or subscribing to Here and Now Anytime in your podcast app of choice. And thanks. Here's the show.
Today, the long but inexorable march towards greater equality takes a very important step forward.
Congress makes marriage equality Supreme Court proof. It's Friday, December 9th, and this is Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Chris Bentley. Today on the show, we've got a special performance and conversation with classical guitarist Berta Rojas, who just took home two Latin Grammys for her latest album. But first, all that's left for the Respect for Marriage Act is President Biden's signature, which he says he'll jot down soon. The House passed the measure yesterday with 39 Republicans joining Democrats to require that all states recognize same-sex and interracial marriages performed in any other state. The act does not require that those states allow those marriages to be performed, though. Well, one of the bill's sponsors joined us to talk about it. Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin spoke to Deepa Fernandez.
First of all, you are the first openly gay member of the Senate. You've been working on issues of equality and marriage for decades. What does the passage of this bill mean for the country and for you?
Well, I have been witness to progress over many years and sometimes steps backwards. But to see the legislative branch, the House and the Senate, pass the Respect for Marriage Act really does show how far we've come. Many of the hard-fought, hard-won rights have been achieved in the courts. The U.S. Supreme Court deciding the case in Obergefell in 2015 to make marriage equality the law of the land. But we haven't necessarily seen our legislative bodies achieve and underscore these victories. This was so big in seeing both houses of Congress take this step to say, should the Supreme Court ever revisit this and reverse it, we are going to make sure that people in interracial marriages and same-sex marriages have the security that marriage provides.
What caused so many Republicans to join in approving this bill?
You know, I think what has changed is the visibility of people in same-sex couples and marriages, families. You know, not so many years ago, I could have talked with many of my colleagues and say, oh, I don't know any gay couples. But since marriage equality has been the law of the land, more and more people have gone to same-sex marriages, to the celebration at weddings. Many know people on their staff or in their extended family or go to church with people. And I think that has been something that resulted in the changing of hearts and minds. That's why we have over 70% of Americans now who support marriage equality, and why we increasingly have strong bipartisan majorities in Congress in the same way.
And there were churches that came out in support of this as well. Now, the bill repeals the prior law, the Defense of Marriage Act. Why is that important?
Well, the Defense of Marriage Act passed in 1996 was a federal law defining marriage to exclude same-sex couples and preventing the federal government from recognizing same-sex marriages should any state begin to recognize them. And that law is still on the books, despite the fact that the Supreme Court declared it unconstitutional. You know, after this summer's decision in the Dobbs case overturning Roe versus Wade, there are so many other cases that were viewed as well settled, that were, you know, that were decided based on similar reasoning and constitutional bases as Roe versus Wade, that people in same-sex marriages, interracial marriages, and in other arenas began to worry that an activist Supreme Court could do the same with regard to marriage equality and these other issues. And if that were to happen, the Defense of Marriage Act would still have been on the books. So that's why it's so important that we've repealed it through the Respect for Marriage Act.
And once this is law, states will have to recognize legal marriages from other states, but it doesn't make legalizing gay marriage a requirement across the country. So does this go far enough?
Well, I certainly know that we looked at how one could draft a federal law that required law changes and constitutional changes at the state level, and it just proved, impossible. That said, this is a safeguard. Should the Supreme Court, which is now a very activist court, decide to relitigate these issues of same-sex marriage or interracial marriage, that a person who has a marriage license or who gets one in a state where it's recognized would have that marriage recognized in any state to which they traveled.
Senator Tammy Baldwin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, that bill passed with broad and rare bipartisan support. But for the rest of the Democrats' agenda, they're working on a razor-thin margin, one that got even thinner today.
I just not worried about folks who may not like this approach. What I am worried about is continuing to do what's right for my state.
That's Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema announcing she's leaving the Democratic Party. Sinema says she still plans to caucus with the Democrats, but as an independent. Alejandra Gomez is the executive director of Lucha, a grassroots political group that has helped Democrats get elected in Arizona. And today, she shared this reaction with Deepa.
You know, today, Kyrsten Sinema told us what we already knew for years, that she is not a Democrat and that she is simply out for herself. You know, what we continue to see is that her record in office has been one of selfishness. She's consistently prioritized her own desire for the spotlight above the needs of Arizonans, and today's news is just the latest example of that.
I mean, groups like yours, grassroots political groups, worked very hard in 2017 to help get a Democrat elected in a traditionally conservative state like Arizona. Do you feel like Senator Sinema has abandoned you?
Absolutely. You know, she betrayed the people who elected her, and she has broken promise after promise, and this is just the latest example of that. You know, she's wildly unpopular across Arizona, and you can cite the AARP polling done in September of 2022.
But, you know, I have to ask you, because Arizona is a state where there are more independents registered than Democrats, and Sinema says what she's doing is just a reflection of what most of her constituents want. Bipartisanship in Congress. Do you believe her?
Absolutely not. And she has a decision to make about whether or not she's running in Arizona, given how unpopular she is. If she does run and creates a three-way race, it'll be up to all of us to make sure that we beat her and elect a real Democrat to represent Arizona.
And so I guess, how do you do that, you know, when you've had this experience with someone who you thought was a real Democrat?
Yeah, we have an incredible congressman that we are really hopeful that, and he has consistently shown up time and time and again in Arizona as a champion, and that's Ruben Gallego. And, you know, Kyrsten Sinema, this shows also her vulnerability, that she does not have a constituency, and she knows that she is unpopular. And again, she's trying to weaken the position of Democrats, but really what she's done is weaken her own position and demonstrated her selfishness.
Alejandra Gomez is the executive director of Lucha, a grassroots political group in Arizona that has helped Democrats get elected in the state. Alejandra, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, guitarist Berta Rojas won Best Classical Album at the Latin Grammys last month. And this week, she stopped by our studios at WBUR for a performance and conversation with Deepak. That's after the break. We've got new episodes of Here and Now anytime every weekday, so subscribe to and follow the show to make sure you don't miss anything. We really don't want you to miss Monday's show when we look at the future of American missions to the moon and whether Americans really want to go back. This future astronaut has other aims.
I really like solar system and planet, and I've always wanted to go to Saturn.
Why Saturn?
Because it has it's so big and it has like a rings around. It's so cool.
What do you think it's like being on the moon?
Fun. Like, you could just learn gymnastics in 1 second there because you could do flips and handstands and all that stuff.
That's Monday on Here and Now Anytime.
And this is Anido's Portrait 1, Chacarera, by Sergio Assad. It's performed by acclaimed classical guitarist Berta Rojas on her album Legado. The piece and the album both won Latin Grammys last month. Legado is a tribute album to some of the great classical guitarists. Berta Rojas teaches guitar at Berklee College of Music, and earlier this week we had the privilege of hosting her in our studio. Berta, welcome to Here and Now, and congratulations on your recent Latin Grammy wins.
I'm so happy to be here. I still cannot believe, you know, and just in case I'm living a dream, please don't wake me up.
How did it feel to get the global recognition for something you've worked at since you were a child?
It's really beautiful. It's a sense of being able to dream and at a certain point being able to embrace that dream. And to see that there are many other people that are embracing that dream with you, that makes it very special, no?
Well, before we go any further, we'd love for you to play for us so that our listeners can take a moment from their really busy day and just soak in your beautiful music.
All right, thank you. So this is Segovia by the great French guitarist Ida Presti.
Beautiful. Tell me about this song, Segovia, because it's a tribute by Ida Presti to Andrés Segovia.
Yeah. So the father of Ida Presti had heard Segovia in a concert. And so he pretty much decided that Ida was going to be a guitarist. In times in which it wasn't really seen a lot, that women would dedicate their lives to guitar, Ida Presti was born in 1924, but her father had decided it for her. And so she embraced the guitar, no? And I think that the decision that the father took was after a concert that Segovia had played. So for Ida Presti, I believe the figure of Andrés Segovia was a figure that inspired her, that motivated her. And so she wrote this piece based on his beautiful arpeggios, beautiful harmonies, and she creates this beautiful and soulful rendition inspiring the legendary figure of Andrés Segovia.
You make me think that I wonder, your path as a guitarist, as a woman classical guitarist from Paraguay. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You're from Paraguay. You're from a big family. Mm. Was music a big part of your upbringing, especially being a girl? Did people encourage you to play?
You know, my family was a special case, I think. Huh? Even though I don't think that women were encouraged to learn music, or at least to learn music, that's okay, but to take it as a profession, you know, that was another conversation, you know. But my family was a musical family. My great-grandmother, whose name was Berta, played the guitar. So in a large family of so many kids, I am the only one whose name is Berta and the only one who plays the guitar. So there's a lot of my great-grandmother in me, I would say.
Mm, that's beautiful. So when did you first pick up a guitar?
I was 6 years old. My brothers, who are musicians, they sang a song for me and started to play it on the keyboard. My brother, Juan Carlos, is a keyboard player. And so he played a piece for me. I was able to sing that piece. He immediately introduced a key change that I was able to follow. And so he said, okay, there's some talent here. We better have her study some instruments, you know.
Y tan jovencita.
Tan jovencita, just, yeah.
Just a quick question.
Yes.
Do you remember the tune that your brother played that you mentioned?
Yeah. I don't know the name in English. Gotas de lluvia sobre mí. Tram, pam, pa, pa, ra, pa, pa, pa.
Oh, raindrops keep falling on my head.
There you go.
It's just a lovely image of a little Berta following along. So, you know, you go on to play there as a child in Paraguay, as you're growing up. You know, I have to say, I have this romantic image of men and women like you sitting, I don't know, on your balconies overlooking bustling streets and just playing this beautiful classical music as life goes by. Tell me about the classical guitar scene in Paraguay.
You know, the image that you were describing was pretty much the image that surrounded me in my younger ages, no? In Paraguay, and the relationship of Paraguay with music is very vibrant, and especially with the classical guitar, because we had a national hero of Paraguay whose name is Agustín Pío Barrios Mangoré, who was a pioneer of the classical guitar and happened to be one of the greatest guitarists of all time. So we are very proud of Agustín Barrios' music. So the guitar is an essential instrument, and an instrument in which we try to convey our feelings and our experiences, yeah, and our sound, right? Yeah, so the guitar is very much part of the lives of Paraguayans.
We're going to take a short break now. Deepa's conversation with Berta Rojas continues in 1 minute with another performance from Berta. Stick around.
Would you play another little piece for us, maybe from the other artist who you pay tribute to on your new album, Lejado?
Yeah. I will play an example of Lejanía, which is a piece by María Luisa Nido, an Argentinian guitarist who was born in 1907.
Thank you.
It's just so soulful and so calming. Tell us a little bit about Maria Luisa Anido.
Well, Maria Luisa Anido also, as Ida Presti, had a father who encouraged her learning the guitar. She was born, as I said before, in 1907, no? And in those days, it was really a rarity to have a woman who would play the guitar. And even though she had the motivation in her home, it wasn't possible for her to travel the world carrying a guitar. And she had to wait a long time to pursue her career and to play concerts all over the world. No? So you will see some videos of her playing at the Tchaikovsky Hall in Moscow with her gray hair, you know. She had to wait until 1950 when her mother passed away to be able to take longer trips and travel with the guitar. We've came a long way since those days.
Mm. So what's it been like for you? I mean, obviously, you are contemporary. Your family was very supportive, but outside of that, how has the world treated and received you? Obviously, you have such talent, but you're still a woman.
Well, I cannot say that it was harder for me. I think that my colleagues were really supportive of us, you know, and were trying to create room to have us as a part of the conversation. I think I had a different experience from that perspective, and I'm very appreciative of all the support I have received. But I know now and more after having recorded Legado and after having studied the lives and the works of these fabulous artists that it wasn't the case in those days, you know. Music was perceived as an ornament, and it wasn't supposed to be your profession, no? I read some articles of the 1900s in which directors of music schools in Argentina or Brazil were complaining of the number of women that wanted to study composition and saying, what a shame, you know, because we need more men in this profession. Yeah? So they really wanted to be a part of this. And it wasn't easy for them to follow your vocation, to pursue your dream, no?
How does it feel when you play, Berta? Because in some respects, it's a kind of solitary act. It's you and those strings on your guitar. Mm. But when you perform, you're the center of everybody's really captured attention. Mm. How does that feel?
Well, I'm a very shy person, no? And I think that's the reason probably why I choose the guitar, because it's an instrument that you can connect very easily with and that you have very close to your heart. And in a way, it becomes my voice, no? To me, it's something that I have to prepare for, to go and share with an audience, no? But the moment that I go on stage and I feel the hearts of an audience opening to my music, that's a moment of immense happiness and of immense gratitude. Because after having lived through the pandemic and being really all by myself, and then suddenly to be able to share again my music with an audience, that is truly a privilege. Yeah, because music, I believe, is completed when the message goes through and when you have an audience that opens their heart and receive it. And in a way, they give it back to you. You can feel that they are with you. There's an energy flowing from the stage and to the audience and coming back to me. Yeah. That sensation is just so special. I have no words to describe it.
Well, if you would play us out, maybe all our collective listener energy from around the country will flow back to you through the airwaves. We've been speaking with classical guitarist Berta Rojas. Her Grammy-winning album is Legado. Can you play us out, Berta?
Yeah, I would like to play a piece by Agustín Pío Barrios Mangoré, and the name is El Último Canto.
Thank you.
Absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much, Bertha. I want you to come and play on our show every single day.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity to share.
This podcast comes from the team behind Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Check out hereandnow.org for more stories, including a look at New York City's child welfare program, which an internal report called predatory and racist against Black and brown parents. Outraged parents and advocates say the system should be dismantled.
We don't need to tinker with it, and we should not be thinking about reform, because reform says to me the pain level was at 10, let's bring it down to an 8. We're here to stop the pain, to stop the bleeding, to stop the extractions of children from our community. We're not trying to reduce the numbers of people we harm. We're trying to stop the harm.
Today's stories were produced by Shirley Jihad, Hafsa Qureshi, Peter O'Dowd, and Emiko Tamagawa. Todd Munt and Gabe Bullard edited the show. Technical direction today from Max Liebman and Mike Moschetto. Max, Mike, and I wrote the theme music. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin. And the executive producer of Here and Now is Carlene Watson. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We're back with you Monday.